Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. For several weeks, we've been answering listeners' questions about the last 48 hours of Lee Harvey Oswald's life at the Dallas Police Department. In one recent episode, we focused on Oswald's killer, Jack Ruby, and how he got into the basement to kill Oswald so easily. This week, our questions come from Robert in Sacramento, California. He asks, do you think Jack Ruby was involved in a conspiracy, and was he forced to kill Lee Harvey Oswald by the mob? Also, I read somewhere that Jack Ruby wrote a note or letter saying he was involved in a conspiracy. Or do you think that he shot Oswald as an act of revenge?
Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
A network television pool camera was broadcasting live to cover Lee Harvey Oswald's transfer from the Dallas Police Department to the county jail on Sunday morning, November 24, 1963. Millions of people watching on NBC saw the shooting as it happened, and in a matter of minutes it was on the other networks. Several photographs were taken of the event, capturing the moments when Ruby pulled the trigger. In 1964, Robert H. Jackson of the Dallas Times-Herald was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Photography for his image, titled Jack Ruby Shoots Lee Harvey Oswald.
Let out by Captain Prince. There is a prisoner. There is Lee Oswald.
He's been shot. He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's a man with a gun. It's absolute panic. Absolute panic here in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters.
Detectives have their guns drawn. Oswald has been shot. There is no question about it. Oswald has been shot.
Great indignation was directed towards Jack Ruby for the murder of Oswald. Many felt that the killing had robbed the nation of essential information and left key questions unanswered. Former Vice President Richard Nixon said, quote, Oswald was also entitled to a trial. Two wrongs don't make a right, end quote. Oswald's murder compounded suspicions that the Kennedy assassination was part of a larger plot. Not all were shocked, however. The crowd outside the Dallas Police Headquarters burst into applause when they had heard that Oswald had been shot. In Dallas and elsewhere in the nation, Oswald was hated in death, and Ruby was viewed as a hero by some citizens. During his time in jail, he received many letters from the public, often praising him for his actions. After his arrest, Ruby said that he had been distraught over President Kennedy's death and had helped the city of Dallas redeem itself in the eyes of the public, and that he was saving Mrs. Kennedy the discomfort of coming back for a trial. He also claimed that he shot Oswald on the spur of the moment when the opportunity presented itself without considering any reason for doing so. Ruby told the FBI that he was in mourning Friday and Saturday. He said that he cried when he heard that the president was shot, quote, cried a great deal, end quote. He explained that his grief was caused by him being an admirer of President Kennedy and the Kennedy family. The anguish over the assassination, Ruby stated, finally, quote, reached the point of insanity, end quote, suddenly compelling him to shoot when Oswald walked in front of him in the basement that Sunday morning. When Jack Ruby went to trial for the murder of Oswald, his defense was that he had psychomotor epilepsy and that the gun was fired unintentionally because Ruby did not have control of his actions. So when given the opportunity to go on record as having killed Oswald to help Jackie Kennedy or to avenge President Kennedy's murder, Ruby instead took the position that his shooting of Oswald was completely unintentional. Ruby asked Dallas attorney Tom Howard to represent him. Howard accepted and asked if Ruby could think of anything that might damage his defense. Ruby responded that there would be a problem if a man by the name of Davis should come up. Ruby told his attorney that he had been involved with Davis, who was a gun runner entangled in anti-Castro efforts. Reporter Seth Cantor, who is an expert on Jack Ruby, speculated in 1978 that the man by the name of Davis that Ruby mentioned to attorney Tom Howard may have been Thomas Eli Davis III, a CIA-connected mercenary. Later, Ruby replaced attorney Tom Howard with prominent San Francisco defense attorney Melvin Belli, who agreed to represent him pro bono. Ruby broke into tears at his bond hearing in January 1964 as he talked to reporters regarding the assassination of Kennedy. He said that he could not understand, quote, how a great man like that could be lost, end quote. On March 14, 1964, Ruby was convicted of murder with malice and was sentenced to death.
An historic 23 days end in a Dallas courtroom as Jack Ruby is taken in to hear the verdict in his trial for the murder of Lee Harvey Oswald, accused assassin of President Kennedy. The charge had been murder with malice, the defense insanity. The ruling that barred all cameras from the courtroom is lifted as Judge Joe B. Brown prepares to hear from the jury their decision of the case. The jurors had heard the final summations in the early morning hours, and they had deliberated for a little over 2 hours before returning to the jury box. Now, the News of the Day cameraman records the judge's words in the tense final moments of a drama that began in national tragedy last November.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have reached a verdict. May I have it, Sheriff, please? We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder with malice as charged in the indictment and assess his punishment at death. Signed, Max E. Causey, Foreman. So say you all. Is that your unanimous verdict? Will all of you whose verdict that is, please hold up your right hands. All right, Sheriff, here's your
prisoner. The prisoner is led back to the cell where he will be held until the final disposition of his appeal. Reporters hear a distraught and emotional attorney Belli reiterate his determination to appeal the verdict. This must be made to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. Further appeals that could drag on for 2 years or so could be made as high as the United States Supreme Court. But the first crucial judgment has been rendered against Jack Ruby.
Ruby's conviction was overturned by the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals on the grounds that an oral confession of premeditation made while in police custody should have been ruled inadmissible because it violated a Texas criminal statute. The court also ruled that the venue should have been changed to a Texas county other than the one in which the high-profile crime had been committed. During the 6 months following the Kennedy assassination, Ruby repeatedly asked to speak to the members of the Warren Commission. The commission initially showed no interest, but Ruby's sister Eileen wrote letters to the commission and her letters became public. The Warren Commission then agreed to talk to Ruby. In June 1964, Chief Justice Earl Warren, Representative Gerald Ford of Michigan, and other commission members went to Dallas to see Ruby.
On a quiet summer Sunday, the Chief Justice of the United States stood peering out the sixth floor window of the School Book Depository Building, just 7 months before an assassin had waited at the same window to kill President Kennedy. Chief Justice Warren was one of several Warren Commission members to visit the assassination site. He spent 2 hours in the building to see with his own eyes the places he had heard about from witnesses. Then the Chief Justice did something unexpected and unprecedented in American history. He went to the Dallas County Jail to visit Jack Ruby, a man whose case may someday reach the Supreme Court. For 3 hours, Justice Warren questioned Ruby. He apparently came away satisfied that Ruby had not known or seen Oswald before the assassination.
Ruby asked Warren several times to take him to Washington, D.C., saying that, quote, my life is in danger here, end quote, and that he wanted an opportunity to make additional statements. Ruby added, quote, I want to tell the truth and I can't tell it here, end quote. Earl Warren told Ruby that he would be unable to comply because many legal barriers would need to be overcome and public interest in the situation would be too heavy. Warren also told Ruby that the commission would have no way of protecting him since it had no public powers. Ruby was also upset that the Warren Commission had hid the results of Ruby's polygraph test. Here's Ruby talking about it in an interview from September 9, 1965.
I want to get this out to you because they never released my results of my polygraph test. That was deleted from the Warren report. Why was that deleted? I don't know why. I insisted upon the polygraph right from the beginning. As a matter of fact, certain questions I created and originated that they would ask me at the time. They spent 9 hours with me at the time, and yet the finality of the results of the test, they stated they refused to divulge the answers that I had given, whether they're true or false, due to the fact of my mental condition.
Eventually, the appellate court agreed with Ruby's lawyers that he should be granted a new trial. On October 5, 1966, the court ruled that his motion for a change of venue before the original trial court should have been granted. Ruby's conviction and death sentence were overturned. Arrangements were underway for a new trial to be held in February 1967 in Wichita Falls, Texas, but Ruby was admitted to Parkland Hospital in Dallas on December 9, 1966, suffering from pneumonia. A day later, doctors discovered cancer in his liver, lungs, and brain. His condition rapidly deteriorated. Ruby died of a pulmonary embolism on January 3, 1967 at Parkland Hospital, the same facility where both Oswald and Kennedy died. He was buried beside his parents in Westlawn Cemetery in Norridge, Illinois.
Death came to Ruby at 10:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. County medical examiner Dr. Earl Rose immediately performed an autopsy.
The autopsy findings showed extensive tumor involvement, involvement of both of the lungs. There were also metastases in the regional lymph nodes, draining the lungs, as well as tumor had traveled to the liver. In addition, the terminal event was related to a blood clot that formed in the right leg, that is correct. The blood clot broke loose and went to the lung, and this was the terminal event or the immediate cause of death.
Lawyer Phil Burleson, who represented Ruby, said the reversal of Ruby's death sentence left Ruby without a conviction on his record.
With the defendant dead, there are no charges, and within a matter of, I'm sure, days or weeks, Mr. Wade's office will file a motion with the court to dismiss the charges. And I think it's significant that if there is anything good about Jack's death, at least from his standpoint, he died not a convicted man.
The way that Ruby died, along with the testimony from other people that support a conspiracy, makes this case all the more interesting. Then there's the question of all Jack Ruby's ties to the mob. Jack Ruby was said to have been acquainted with the Mafia. The House Select Committee on Assassinations said that Ruby had known Chicago mobster Sam Giacconi and Joseph Scampese since 1947 and had been seen with them on many occasions. G. Robert Blakely, the chief counsel for the House Select Committee on Assassination, called Campese the number two man in the mob in Dallas. He wrote in a 1993 article for the Washington Post, quote, "It is difficult to dispute the underworld pedigree of Jack Ruby, though the Warren Commission did it in 1964, end quote. Similarly, a PBS Frontline investigation into the connections between Ruby and Dallas organized crime figures reported the following. In 1963, Sam and Joe Campese were leading figures in the Dallas underworld. Jack knew the Campeses and had been seen with them on many occasions.
Ruby was also acquainted with leading figures in the Dallas underworld, including Sam and Joe Campese.
Yes, Jack knew the Campeses and had seen them together on numerous occasions. Jack ate out there at the Egyptian lounge, and he'd come in, they'd shake his hand, sit down, and sometimes Joe Campese would sit with him, and if I came in, well, you know, I'd sit with Jack Ruby and Joe Campese. I knew them. We all knew each other well.
The Campeses were lieutenants of Carlos Marcello, the Mafia boss who had reportedly talked of killing the president.
Now, the Campeses did know Carlos Marcello because one day I was in Joe Campese's office and he called Carlos on the phone and I talked to Carlos on the phone.
On the night before President Kennedy was assassinated, Ruby and Ralph Paul had dinner together at the Egyptian Lounge, run by Joe and Sam Campese. After Ruby was jailed for killing Oswald, Joe Campese regularly visited him. Here's G. Robert Blakely, the chief counsel for the House Select Committee on Assassinations, speaking on a PBS Frontline investigation program about Jack Ruby.
If the mob had a hand in the president's death, and I think they did, and they induced Oswald to kill the president, it was terribly important that he be silenced because eventually Oswald, if alive, would testify as to who his associates were, or they ran the risk that he would. And therefore, there's every indication that Ruby stalked and killed Oswald in an effort to silence him.
So Robert asked in our question this week, do you think Jack Ruby was involved in a conspiracy and was forced to kill Oswald by the mob? Well, let me put it to you this way, Robert. The mob was Jack Ruby's friend, and Ruby could well have been paying off an IOU the day he was used to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. Ruby expressed it to Chief Justice Earl Warren in their June 7, 1964 session when he said, quote, "I have been used for a purpose," end quote. It would not have been hard for the mob to maneuver Ruby through the ranks of a few negotiable Dallas police that would have helped Ruby get access to kill Oswald at the Dallas Police Department. The House Select Committee on Assassinations wrote in its 1979 final report that Ruby's shooting of Oswald was not a spontaneous act and that it involved at least some premeditation. Similarly, the committee believed that it was less likely that Ruby entered the police basement without assistance, even though the assistance may have been provided with no knowledge of Ruby's intentions. The committee was troubled by the apparently unlocked doors along the stairway route and the removal of security guards from the area of the garage nearest the stairway shortly before the shooting. There is also evidence that the Dallas Police Department withheld relevant information from the Warren Commission concerning Ruby's entry to the scene of Oswald's transfer. So to answer Robert's question about what makes me think Ruby was involved in a conspiracy, first we have the potential foreknowledge of Oswald's murder by George Senator. According to reporter Seth Canner, Ruby's roommate George Senator called Dallas attorney Jim Martin from a payphone near the Eatwell Cafe and asked Martin to represent his friend Jack Ruby for murdering Lee Harvey Oswald. Senator placed this call minutes before the news came over the radio that Oswald had been shot, making it appear as though Senator had foreknowledge of the event. Next, there's Detective Don Archer's description of Ruby's behavior upon hearing that Oswald was dead. Detective Archer was one of the first people who saw Ruby immediately after he shot Oswald. Here's Detective Don Archer describing Ruby's behavior in the 1988 documentary, The Men Who Killed Kennedy.
His behavior, to begin with, he was very hyper. He was sweating profusely. I could see his heart. Of course, we had stripped him down for security purposes. He asked me for one of my cigarettes, so I gave him a cigarette. Finally, after about 2 hours had elapsed, which put it around 1 p.m., the head of the Secret Service came up, and I conferred with him, and he told me that Oswald had, in effect, died, and it should shock him because it will mean the death penalty. So I returned and said, "Jack, it looks like it's going to be the electric chair for you." Instead of being shocked, he became calm. He quit sweating. His heart slowed down. I asked him if he wanted a cigarette, and he advised me he didn't smoke. And I was just astonished that this was a complete difference in behavior of what I'd expected. I would say that his life had depended on him getting Oswald.
He made the statement, "We are going to kill him," which leads me to believe that this was not a spontaneous thing that happened on the spur of the moment. He was watching Oswald coming out the door, and all of a sudden he decided to shoot him. I do not believe that. I think this was a planned event with him being the man to do the shooting.
For conspiracy theorists, hearing that Ruby looked relieved at finding out that Oswald died is one more fact to confirm that Ruby was killing Oswald on behalf of someone else, presumably someone whom Ruby feared. In his Warren Commission testimony, Detective Don Archer claimed that after his arrest, Ruby looked him straight in the eye and said, quote, "Well, I intended to shoot him 3 times, end quote. Ruby's response to Archer did not suggest a spontaneous reaction and that he implied having prior intention. The most significant evidence that we have regarding Ruby's motive comes from the things that Ruby himself said. In Ruby's confidential psychiatric evaluation documents from 1965, Ruby told psychiatrist Warren Tudor that the assassination of President Kennedy was, quote, an act of overthrowing the government, and that he knew who had killed President Kennedy, end quote. Ruby also told Tudor, quote, "I am doomed. I did not want to die, but I am not insane. I was framed to kill Oswald," end quote. Next, there is the testimony of Al Maddox, a Dallas County deputy sheriff whose duty was to guard Ruby both in jail and when he was later taken to Parkland Hospital before he died. This covers Robert's second question of the week. Al Maddox claims that Ruby gave him a note that said Ruby was part of a larger conspiracy. Here's the Al Maddox interview in 1996.
Jack Ruby was dying or getting sick, I believe it was 1967 or 69. He reached up and put a little note in your hand, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he sure did. He sure did. He and Melvin Bella, I believe, were together at the time. And he was still, he was ambulatory. He could walk then. He was still in pretty good shape, but he was sweating an awful lot. And his hand was wet.
Real wet.
Where he had this note palmed in his hand. And when he shook hands with me, I knew he wanted me to read a note. And sure enough, it was a letter that Jack wrote saying that it was a conspiracy. And
his motive was to silence Oswald.
His motive was to silence Oswald.
What happened to the note? We don't know. But the bottom line is that Al Maddox has decided to put his reputation on the idea that this thing he said happened actually happened. Then there's this. Ruby conducted a brief televised news conference in March 1965, a year after his conviction. Here's Ruby surrounded by his lawyers in front of the press.
People have so much to gain and have such a material motive for put me in a position I'm in. We'll never let the true facts come of our voice to the world.
Part of that interview is really hard to understand, so here's what Ruby says. Ruby states, quote, "Everything pertaining to what's happening has never come to the surface. The world will never know the true facts of what occurred and my motives. The people who had so much to gain and had such an ulterior motive for putting me in the position I'm in will never let the true facts come above board to the world." A reporter then asks, "Are these people in very high positions, Jack?" And Ruby responds, "Yes," end quote. Robert Blakely, who was chief counsel for the House Select Committee on Assassinations from 1977 to 1979, said, quote, "The most plausible explanation for the murder of Oswald by Jack Ruby was that Ruby had stalked him on behalf of organized crime, trying to reach him on at least three occasions in the 48 hours before he silenced him forever," end quote. Russell Moore, an acquaintance of Ruby, testified to the commission that Ruby expressed no bitterness towards Oswald and called him, quote, "a good-looking guy," end quote, comparing him to Paul Newman. Oh, wow. David Shim noted in his book Contract on America that some people claim that Ruby was upset over the weekend of the assassination, while others said that he was not. On Friday night, TV newsman Vic Robertson Jr. saw Ruby at police headquarters and said that he appeared to be anything but under stress or strain. He seemed happy, joyful, and was joking and laughing. Announcer Glenn Duncan also said that Ruby was not grieving and seemed happy that evidence was piling up against Oswald. Shim also suggests that Ruby made a candid confession when giving testimony to the Warren Commission. During his testimony, Ruby teared up when talking about a Saturday morning eulogy for Kennedy, but after composing himself, inexplicably said, quote, "I must be a great actor, I tell you that," end quote. Ruby also remarked that they didn't ask me another question. "If I love the president so much, why wasn't I at the parade? And it's strange that perhaps I didn't vote for President Kennedy or didn't vote at all, that I should build up such a great affection for him." Shim also noted several people who knew Ruby who claimed that the patriotic statements which Ruby professed were quite out of character. Ruby's gambling business partner, Harry Hall, told the FBI that Ruby was the type who was interested in any way to make money, and he also said that he could not conceive of Ruby doing anything out of patriotism. Jack Kelly had known Ruby casually since 1943, and he scoffed at the idea of a patriotic motive being involved by Ruby in the slaying of Oswald. He said that he could not see Ruby killing Oswald out of patriotism, but rather for publicity or for money. Ruby's friend Paul Jones told the FBI that he doubted that Ruby would have become emotionally upset and killed Oswald on the spur of the moment. He felt Ruby would have done it for money or to pay off a debt that he owed to the mob. David Shim presented evidence that Mafia leaders Carlos Marcello and Santo Trafficante Jr. and organized labor leader Jimmy Hoffa ordered the assassination of Kennedy. Shim cited, in particular, a 25-fold increase in the number of out-of-state telephone calls from Jack Ruby to associates of these crime bosses in the months before the assassination. The House Select Committee on Assassinations report stated that, quote, "most of Ruby's phone calls during late 63 were related to his labor troubles. In the light of the identity of some of the individuals with whom Ruby spoke, however, the possibility of other matters being discussed could not be dismissed," end quote. Bill Bonanno, son of New York Mafia boss Joseph Bonanno, stated in Bound by Honor that he realized that certain Mafia families were involved in the JFK assassination when Ruby killed Oswald, since Bonanno was aware that Ruby was an assistant of Chicago mobster Sam Giancano. One last note about Jack Ruby before we go. The 1964 Warren Commission, which was the official investigation into JFK's assassination, looked into Ruby's whereabouts when Kennedy himself was killed. They concluded he was five blocks away and that Oswald was the only person responsible for Kennedy's assassination. There was no wider conspiracy, according to the Warren Commission. But 15 years later, the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations concluded that a conspiracy had been involved in the president's murder, but couldn't be any more specific than that. The conspiracy theory floodgates had been opened. Fast forward to 2024, and they still haven't been shut. Fuel was poured on the fire in 2018 when the U.S. government began releasing previously classified files on the assassination of JFK. Since the first release in mid-2017, around 55,000 documents have been made available for public consumption, the last being released in April 2018. However, some big revelations have been discovered in those documents. Document number 321-49267 seems to directly contradict the findings of the Warren Commission with regards to Jack Ruby. The document places Ruby at the scene of JFK's assassination, and not five blocks away. It states, quote, "Recently, a group manager in the Dallas Intelligence Division received information from a confidential informant that might be helpful into the investigation of the Kennedy assassination." The informant stated that on the morning of the assassination, Jack Ruby contacted him and asked him if he would like to, quote, "watch the fireworks," end quote. He was with Jack Ruby and standing at the corner of the Postal Annex building facing the Texas School Book Depository building at the time of the shooting. The informant is named Bob Vanderslice, who relayed this information to his FBI handlers in 1977. It doesn't state why it took 14 years for this information to come to light, but the file goes on to say that as soon as the shooting had occurred, Ruby turned and headed for the Dallas Morning News building without saying a single word to Vanderslice. If the informant is to be believed, Ruby was among the crowds who saw JFK get shot, and he seemed to have prior knowledge of what was about to happen with his fireworks comment. So, Robert, do I believe that Jack Ruby played a role in that assassination scenario over that weekend in Dallas in 63? I certainly do. If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon. Or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. Also this week, I'd like to announce that I'll be speaking at the Citizens Against Political Assassinations, or otherwise known as CAPA, conference in Dallas in November. If you'd like to get a signed copy of my book or just meet and talk about the case, I'd love to see you there in November. The conference runs from Friday, November 22nd to Sunday, November 24th. I will be speaking about my book, The End of Innocence, and also I'll be speaking about the presence of professional assassins in Dealey Plaza the day President Kennedy was killed. I'll also be speaking about a second arrest in the Texas Theater that day. You could get tickets for the conference at www.capa-us.org. Hope to see you there.